Damn it, Nick.
I love being on here with you guys, Nick and Joe. I really appreciate it.
Literally too long didn't read.
TLDR, you guys are awesome.
We live? This thing live is on. Hello?
Yes.
Testing, testing. Nicholas.
What?
It is Valentine's Day, my friend.
Wow. Yeah, that's right. Oh, and, no.
And I've got to say, oops. I did it again. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, listeners of all ages, Geeks Worldwide Radio and the Dork Shared Gooniverse proudly present to you the greatest, and I mean the greatest, podcasting team in the world. He's the comic book writer, Nick Fryer. I am the Corona Kid, Backcracker, Dr. Joe, and together we are the TLDR Comic Book Club, baby! Nicholas, how's it going?
I am splendid. That is a very kind label that you are giving me. And I also want to make propose something to the general masses here, because obviously we have the ear of all of America. A lot of times...
And across the pond.
That's true, especially in Germany. Joe has said many a time that this is his Jordan flu game, and he's doing it once again. I propose, though, to the people that we get rid of the term the Jordan flu game and make it the Doc flu game. Because yeah. I think you've earned that. You've done it too many times. You've stepped up and you've shown that, like, no sickness, no matter what it is going to slow you down.
He just did it in one game. I mean, I've done it. I mean, God knows how many times.
Yeah.
Because apparently I've got the immune system of a fucking gnat.
Yeah, and this is regular season. Mainline, this is regular season games for us. You're doing it on every single day. You do it in mainline episodes. You do it on specials. You do it when we have guests on. It doesn't matter. Nothing's going to stop you unless we're talking to Matt Groom. Then you might tell him to go pound sand. Or Kill Your Darlings. You might tell them to go pound sand too. That's about it, though.
I did tell him pound sand. I got my comeuppance.
You did. And we'll be talking about Kill Your Darlings today. And also want to note to the people, if you're finding us on Instagram for the first time, we have found a way to do Instagram live. StreamYard has enabled that, so we are taking advantage of that. Thanks for joining us if you're doing it for the first time via Instagram. And for those who don't know, now you can use that in the future, because Lord knows that can be easier than other platforms. But on top of socials, do want to mention too, make sure you go and follow us on any of our audio channels. That's Apple, Spotify, Geeks Worldwide Radio, Amazon, Pocket Cast, all the major podcasting platforms. You're going to find us over there. And if you're finding us on one of our streams right now and we're not on one of your podcasting platforms, feel free to let us know. Slide into our Twitter DMs or our Instagram DMs. We'll make sure we take care of it. But pretty sure we have you covered. The reason why I say that is not just for my own health, but it's the only place you're going to find our Fryerside chats. Those are our conversations with creators across the industries. We're talking about artists, writers. We've talked to editors, COOs of publishing houses. You name it, we're talking to them, and we're not going to slow down, even though we're doing a mainline episode this week. But that is the only place that you can find our Fryerside chats. Go make sure you subscribe there. Leave a 5-star rating and review while you're there. If you can leave a higher rating, by all means, leave the highest. Otherwise, you're going to learn the real meaning of Backcracker, and you're going to ruin his weekend. But Joe, you did mention that writing, that I have dabbled, tipped my toes into a little bit of writing. I have mentioned it on here. I have mentioned it on Change My Mind as well. I do have a story in the upcoming Scott Snyder Presents The Cloakroom Issue 1. That is going to be launching on Kickstarter the day that you and I are recording this, and is going to be live up until, I believe, March 13th. I think that's how.
Oh, it's my birthday.
Yeah, look at that. Look at that. How about that? So, yeah, I'm very excited about it. Going to be doing the launch with, I believe, Ming Chen from the Kevin Smith comic book show. As the comic book guys, right? The comic on AMC. He's going to be hosting a little launch party for it. So you guys will be able to hear that on our YouTube channel and on our Twitter page. We're not doing Instagram, not trying to not overcomplicate things on our end, but very excited. I'll be giving a little bit more detail about the story, the art. If you follow us on Twitter, you've seen some of the art, but very excited to tell more people about it.
So I'll say this. I've read some of Nick's writing, not for this particular story, but for other things. And Nicholas, your writing is excellent. I can't wait to read this. But what I really wanted to do is take this time real quick, is I need you to tell the people the name of your artist and where to find her, because your Nye, right? Her art is absolutely fantastic. I put it in the realm of when I look at her art and the art you'll see in this story for the cloakroom, I sort of, it's, it's Dan Mora-esque. And who is mm-hmm. who is the artist for Seven Secrets there with Tom Taylor?
Daniele Di Naculo.
Yes. In the same
vein. That's a good call. That's right? a good call. Yeah.
In the same vein, she is an A-plus comic book artist. This is going to be a hell of a story. This is a wonderful thing that Scott Snyder's doing for up-and-coming writers and artists. So you're definitely going to want to check that out. Nick, please tell the people the artist's name and where to find her, because everyone should see this stuff. It is excellent.
Yeah, Nayara Rodriguez is the artist for Widowmaker. I should mention the title of the story. Actually, I'll give you guys a little insight right now. Widowmaker is going to be the first story that you see in Scott Snyder Presents the Cloakroom. Also, for Scott Snyder fans, too, this is a little bit of a collector's item, too. He's going to have a forward in this. So I have not seen that. I've only been told that he's going to have a forward in it. So I am very excited to see what he has to say. But as for Nayara Joe, who, of course, we just call her Nai, she is she's over on Instagram at riddle__28. You'll actually see one of her recent posts is the Widowmaker Instagram post that we posted on TLDR a little while back. And you can see quite a bit of her other work. She's done stuff in previous Scott Snyder class projects, and she's done some other anthologies as well. She actually did the cover for the Tales of the Cloakroom Volume 2 a little while back. So she does a great job. I've really enjoyed getting to know her. I've known her for quite some time now, and I'm very excited for everybody to get to see her work. Because Joe, I agree with you on both those fronts. The Daniele Di Naculo one I've never thought of before. And in this, I sent you the updated pages. Her inks, thanks to talking to the editors of the series, Veronica and Jerry, her inks have kind of taken another level for some of the previous stuff that I've shown you before, even from what the people have seen right now, because the stuff that's out there is not the most updated art. So I'm very excited for them to experience everything that Nye brings to the table.
Yeah, there's some images there that really just stand out. Excellent stuff. And like I said, A-plus comic book artist, hands down.
Yeah, and I appreciate you saying that. And on top of that, too, some would say that the Cloakroom news is the biggest news in comics today. Some would say that the biggest news in comics today is that we're getting two omnibuses of Marvel DC crossover content from years back. It looks like we're going to be getting this in August. I think it's August 6th. So these are stories that were published years and years ago. And I can't believe it, Joe, that we're getting this. I get this notification in my email from DC about this news. And I don't think I got anything from Marvel on that front. I don't know why that would necessarily be. I'm sure they both have to, you know, give the okay on this. But we laid it all out over on Threads and over on Twitter, all the stories that are going to be included in these omnibuses,
omnibuy
sounds better. Do you have any interest in picking up either of these?
I think they'll make like good collector's editions. It depends on how much they are. If they're like $100 plus, probably out. But there'll be great collector's editions, I think, for those who want to put those on their shelves. What I'm hoping is that maybe this will spark some creativity, and maybe you know how I love events, but maybe they'll do something with updated writers, you know, more present day writers, more present day artists, and you know, allow things to both get a little silly but also maybe get a little dark and weird. Who knows? But that's my hope. Is that maybe they kind of freshen this up, because this is from what, the 90s?
This is from the 90s. Yeah, I believe it's 96 was the
year. Okay. Yeah. So not too ancient, but like, you know, like I said, great collector's pieces if they're not terribly expensive.
Yeah. So the first title is DC versus Marvel Omnibus, and then the other one is DC/Marvel, the Amalgam Age Omnibus. So again, we broke it down on Twitter and on Threads. All the issues that are going to be included in those two omnibuy. I think this is very interesting. The other reason that I'm like loving this, Joe, is because I can't help but think this is something that people have been clamoring for to have happen again for a long time. Everybody's always interested in having these two properties crossover, and I just can't help but wonder if they're doing this right now, then could we get another round of new stories in the not too distant future?
Well, that's what I'm hoping for, right? I mean, that would be, you know, that would be, I think, where you go with this. Now, since 1996, too, that's shit. That's 20 plus years ago, right? 96 to 2006, 10.
Almost 20, 16. Yeah. Oh, in over 20, yeah.
Over math. 20, yeah, yeah, right?
You're the math guy on the show.
Oh, that's we're in trouble.
So I had to develop all those systems jokes. I can't do right? the math.
But there's been a lot of new characters since then, right? And, yeah. And a lot of new wrinkles to origins, new canons, things like that. And you, like I said, you could get really silly. You could get really weird. You could get dark. You could, you know, there's a lot you could do with it. Mm-hmm. And I think that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I would love to see. And then, look, I only need it in the comics. I do.
But don't give me any. Yeah, no, I want this strictly a comic book thing.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I'm just saying, like,
Marvel can't even figure out their fucking deal with the multiverse within their own universe. Adding it with fucking DC and that fucking
Deadpool's going to fix it all. Deadpool's
yeah, we say that, but fucking Multiverse of Madness was supposed to fix it all.
This is true.
Spider-Man was supposed to fucking fix it all.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, I have high hopes for Deadpool.
Yeah.
And I think it will be excellent. But I am a little concerned that I do believe I read that Ryan Reynolds was not particularly pleased with all the meddling done with this particular movie.
Oh, where did you read that?
This was a while ago.
Oh, okay.
It could have been, you know, I can't remember but like I do recall reading some things where now it could have been fake news. It could have been
okay. You know, that's my only concern. I'm not saying that's not a real possibility, but
yeah, I think it's going to be excellent. You know, and I can't wait to see it. This is the first Marvel movie that I've actually gone 12 to midnight for. And sometimes I still haven't seen a ton of the past Marvel movies. Yeah. To be honest,
would you say since Spider-Man probably?
Probably. Because yeah. I still haven't seen Black Panther 2. I still haven't seen the Marvels. I still haven't seen, like, I've just had, like,
mm-hmm.
Black Panther 2 is one I should have seen, honestly. But, like, all it the other good. Marvel stuff that's come out, like, I just haven't had. I still didn't finish. I haven't seen Guardians of the Galaxy 3 yet. Like, I'm just
yeah. That one's a little sad, though. I will tell you that.
Like, yeah, that was probably the reason why.
Yeah, but
like, I just have not had, like, any, like, I don't know. Like, for me, and I got to get over it. Like, for me, it was, you know, with Endgame, right? Mm-hmm. That everything up to that was so good. And then I just got so, like, the reason why I haven't seen the newer stuff is because it was, like, Thor was fucking terrible. Spider-Man was fine. I enjoyed it. It was my favorite out of all the, out of those, sort of right out of the gate there. But Multiverse of Madness was fucking terrible. Just, like, I kind of lost interest a little bit. Because it seems like there's no direction, right? That's the thing. They seem almost rudderless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been we've talked about this ad nauseum, and we start adding X-Men into the mix, like that's just a game changer. No.
Oh, yeah. So, it'll be better than Madam Web.
Yes, that's for sure. I'm going to have to see that for change my mind. So I'll be talking about that soon. But again, reminder for everybody, the DC Marvel Omnibuy, those two are going to be coming out in August. So probably something you're going to want to take care like advantage of like FOC stuff, because I definitely saw somewhere like a while supplies last. So don't mess around with that. If you want it, make sure you pre-order it as soon as you can. But anyways, Joe, that's enough of chatter that's not related to the actual comics that are coming out right now. That's what we're here to do. Let's get to some catching up. I don't have anything to add personally. There was a lot to get to this week, but I know you caught up on quite a bit.
Yeah, because I've been down and out. So I've been reading. So Jock's book from Distillery, Gone, issues 1 and 2. Fantastic. It was a good first issue. Took a little bit, but then got me there by the end. The second issue definitely kicked up. So enjoying those, other than the prestige size format drives me bonkers, but that's a me thing. caught up on X-Men.
Nice.
I read the finale of The Cull. Excellent. Can't wait to discuss that book on the show. Batman and Robin issue 5. I missed that one. I thought I was all up to date. So went back and read that. Excellent. Thundercats issue 1. By
Declan Shalvey.
Thank you very much. Excellent. So good. It got me going back. I think I talked about this, and I think I'm gonna go back and start watching the cartoon.
Nice.
I've been ripping through the cartoon.
Nice.
It's voice acting that's absolutely horrific, but like takes me back to my childhood. But solid. This was an issue. I don't know, because I don't think I discussed it because I hadn't read it yet on the show last week. If you're new to Thundercats, You're going to love it. Pick it up, right? Because it does a great job at sort of introducing you to the characters, to the world. And if you read Thundercats or watched Thundercats when you were a kid, this was sort of a great like refresher and all that. So very true to actually the first issue to the first episode of the show. A couple subtle changes here and there, but excellent. And then Batman 142, which I will dive into in a little bit when we get to DC, because man, issue 142 and then 143 back to back weeks. This is dropped. Batman. Excellent. I want to talk about that in a bit more.
I remember hearing that was going to be the case with this little story that we got going on here with Batman. Before we get into Marvel, so you can catch your breath, because again, you're doing your flu game, and I got to be your Scottie Pippen today and make sure that you're good to go and you can perform at your best. We don't have anything out from AWA this week, so we're not going to be touching on anything there. But Little Black Book, you heard me talk about it last time we convened. Make sure you go to your local comic shop and let them know you want to add that to your pull list. The FOC is coming up in a few days after we're recording this. Make sure you do that. Joe, unfortunately, can't read it, but I got some extra access to it. So make sure you go let them know. And yeah, just want to make sure I mentioned that, Joe, before we get to what's new this week. Please kick us off with Marvel.
So speaking of AWA, Little Black Book, I just texted you a meme I made, which I will be posting on Twitter later. So keep your eyes, keep your peepers popped. You're going to want to check that out as I rip off these Marvel books here. So from Marvel, the week of Valentine's Day, 2/14/24, the year of our Lord, we have The Amazing Spider-Man, issue 43. Wolverine 43. Nicholas, did you read it?
Dude, yeah. Did you read it? Oh my God. I'll say this for those of you who you know, you're listening to us right now on your way to your local comic shop, or you're driving home, getting ready to read it, or back to the office, there is a jaw-dropping page no one is ready for.
Legit, figuratively and literally jaw-dropping.
Crazy.
But I saw that. I had to double take because like we were fuck, because there's a subtle little detail of just anatomy that's on there. Because I didn't pick it up the first time through. Anyways, Benjamin Percy, my lord, Victor LaValle, my lord, and Jeff Shaw. Holy smokes! Yeah, we have Miles Morales Spider-Man issue 16, Darth Vader issue 43, Fall of the House of X issue 2, which I meant to read but didn't get to. Vengeance of Moon Knight, issue 2. Superior Spider-Man, issue 4. Blade, issue 8. Black Panther, issue 9. Spider-Gwen Smash, issue 3. Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver, issue 1. Thunderbolts, issue 3. Deadly Hands of Kung Fu Gang War, issue 3. Daredevil Black Armor, issue 4. Night Thrasher, issue 1. And Beware the Planet of the Apes, issue 2.
I also need to go back and check Fall of the House of X, issue 2. And I got to get going on Vengeance of Moon Knight. I was waiting for the second issue to come out before I checked that first one. Because I know I've been so – I was so lucky to binge Jed McKay's run on Moon Knight. And now I got Vengeance of the Moon Knight. And I'm going to have to do it month to month. And it's just gonna be like, oh, God, I'm like, yeah, any more of that Moon Knight, man? but okay, DC this week. Joe did say he's going to talk about Batman 143. We'll get back to that in a sec. First, Action Comics 1062, Batman and Robin issue 6, which Joe was reading. Green Lantern issue 8. Batman City of Madness issue 3. Wesley Dodds the Sandman issue 5. Blue Beetle issue 6. Outsiders issue 4. Speed Force issue 4. Sinister Sons issue 1. Mad issue 3. And then before you get to Batman, Joe.
36.
What did I say?
3.
30? I said 3? Just 3
said,
straight
you,
up.
You said straight up 3.
Jeez. Wow. Okay. I'm Ron Burgundy. But you wrote it correctly. Mad 36. And then before you get to Batman, Red Hood the Hill issue 1. I just wanted to say, like, we knew about this coming. I saw that the Red Hood the Hill issue 0 was actually like a redistribution of, I believe it was Red Hood like 52 and 53, something like that. And so I didn't go back and reread it because I did remember what had happened there. But I read this and I thought, okay, you have my attention. It didn't knock my socks off necessarily, but part of the reason why you have my attention is that Red Hood is back to, you know, he has guns in his hands. And like with the most characters, we don't, you know, I don't care to see that with any other characters, but with Red Hood, to me, that symbolizes a little bit extra with him, because that's, again, like a defiance of Batman. And that's what makes him such an appealing character. Even though it still seems that they're kind of like in a decent place. But then also at the same time with Red Hood, the Hill issue one, there wasn't a whole ton of Red Hood in this story, him or Jason Todd, obviously the same person, but you get my point. So it was like, okay, like I will check out the second issue because it's Red Hood, because I, you know, obviously I care about the character a ton. So that's where I'm at on this one. But what about Batman 143? What'd you think?
So we talk about Mike Chip and Zdarsky and his understanding of characters and all that. And when he was sort of wrapping up Daredevil and moving over to DC, before he started writing Batman mainline, he wrote a series, Batman the Night, which was sort of a Batman origin story, right? It wasn't the classic sort of one that we're all sort of familiar with. This was really all about his several years of training and the different mentors that he had throughout. And it was excellent. And so then he starts writing Batman and doing an excellent job there. And so what he's doing now is he's using the Batman book to do Joker Year One.
Mm.
And I know, you know, we've sort of talked about this in the past. We need to know Joker's origin story. Is the mystique, you know, best left unknown? But what I'll say is this, like, yes, I agree with that in a sense, but like at a certain point, the Joker's been around for so long. We've had a couple of different origin type books, you know, throughout, but like, this is what Chip is doing right now. And he's done these first two issues with Joker Year One. Is some of the most fascinating Joker storytelling I have ever read. And that's saying something, because there's some excellent Joker centric books out there. Mm-hmm. The Killing Joke, you know, being sort of like the top of, you know, the top of the mountain there. What he's done with the Joker is given you his origin story while still keeping that mystique, right? There's borrowing parts of that Red Hood origin in through there. There's some Three Jokers, you know, which is a central theme of what Chip's doing here. And he's also pulling elements from his run on Batman the Night in here. And he's what he's doing is he's giving you the Joker. And he's sort of showing you Joker's training, if you will, on becoming the Joker. Who Joker's meant. Joker has a mentor. And what goes on in these first two issues of this story, Nick, I am telling you, if this only ends up being like, this in and of itself, I believe, is a TLDR worthy arc.
Nice.
Right? Of a greater, right? This is Batman. Like I said, it's 142, 143. Like, I might have to do an episode just on this, this little run here, because it is that good. It is so fascinating what he's done with the Joker, because he is as insane as ever. But you know, like what we had when, you know, when the Three Jokers came out, we loved that so much. He sort of has taken that, but to a much deeper dive. He's really sort of exploring, and that's what Chip is great at, right? When it comes to like sort of the human condition, he's really great at exploring the depths of that. And he's these three sort of personalities of the Joker, he's really fleshing out. And that what happens in this particular issue was some of them was, I don't want to say like, be it like, you know, like hyperbole, say it was some of the most like gruesome Joker stuff I've read. It's not that, but like there's a side to the psychosis that we get in this issue that is just peak Joker. And just makes this sort of character that much more, because we, like Tynan had his run on the Joker, you know, he wrote a Joker centric book, which I thought was a bit more of a Jim Gordon book than it was a Joker book, but it was still excellent. This is must read stuff, plain and simple.
Nice. Yeah. I think so. This is, if I'm not mistaken too. So I'm pretty sure the third issue of this is the final one. And that's going to be coming up next week. I think it's 3 weeks in a row.
Yeah, that in and of itself is TLDR worthy.
Yeah, I and also, if I'm not mistaken, they're like double-sized issues too. Is that correct, or am I incorrect?
They're a little bit longer.
Because
typically there's Batman, and then there's like there's a backup story. No backup stories in these. It's just straight up Joker. Cool.
Yeah, I mean, if there's anybody there's a short list of people that I would trust to do this, and it's not necessarily anybody who's just been a good Batman writer. It's just a short list of people, and Chip's definitely on that. And this is not surprising at all. I can't wait to hear you talk about it in some more detail on here down the line. That is awesome. That's awesome stuff. Do you want to take us through Image?
I sure do, Nicholas. So, from Image Comics, we have The Deviant, issue 4, which you are reading. Speaking of James Tynion the 4th, we have The Scorched, issue 26. We have I Hate Fairyland, issue 11.
Interesting.
Blood Commandment, issue 4. Now, this next book is one I'm interested in. I'm not typically a big Creepshow reader, but we have Creepshow, Joe Hill's Wolverton Station, issue 1. I love Joe Hill's comic book stuff, so I definitely want to check this out. Petrol Head, issue 4. Our Bones Dust, issue 3. The Bloody Dozen, A Tale of the Shrouded College, issue 3. I need to go back and read issue 2 because I really loved the first one. We have Dutch, issue 1. The Weatherman, issue 2. The Cabinet, issue 1. And then we have a couple of number ones here. Nicholas, you choose which one and start us off.
Yeah, so The Infernals, issue 1. Of course, we've had Ryan Parrott, Noah Gardner, and John J. Pearson on the show previously. We have told you guys about this a ton. Definitely go check out that chat if you're listening to us right now and you have not done so already. Again, you can find that on all your audio devices only. You can't find that anywhere else on our channels, our video channels, I should say. The elevator pitch on this is Succession meets The Omen. For those wondering, and I mean, it makes perfect sense. And again, not someone who hasn't watched Succession yet, but heard a ton about it because everybody and their mother has been watching Succession.
Except
you, your wife, me, and my wife. That's pretty much it. But anyways, it still sounds interesting. And then the show does. I'd like to watch it at some point. And based off of the book, this book, The Infernals, issue 1, just getting that taste, like this sounds great. This is outstanding. I really, really enjoyed it. This one takes the pacing of this issue is perfect because there's a lot to take in. We're meeting a few different characters. We're figuring out how this like son of the devil story is different than anyone else that we've heard previously. And then like on top of that, the writing is paced well, and then with the art, it fits perfectly with that too, because like not only are you going to enjoy John's style in experiencing this heaven and hell story, but his work, like his approach to the page and taking up, making every single inch matter is going to make
why that's funny.
Yep, when you guys read it, but it's just that allows you to take some time to sit in everything that's happening and take in all the characters. And I felt like after I read this, I know what's going on. I really enjoyed the experience. I am ready for issue 2. And then on top of that, they give you this letter at the end of the issue and they tell you even more shit. And I was like, what the fuck? So I'm very excited for other people to get a look at it. But I know you loved it too.
Yeah. This was an excellent first issue. They said everything, you know, that you want. The storytelling was great. The characters were fantastic. A wide range of characters. One in particular really, stood out to me as being wildly interesting. The art, Pearson's art is just, we talked about every inch, but like his panels, his scenery, his colors, everything is excellent. And it's dark. You're dealing with like Succession, right? As you said, with the devil's family. So like what could you want? So this was I can't wait to see. I tried like hell to get advanced copies of this as well, but I haven't heard yet, surprisingly, you know.
Yeah, we're gonna have to wait on issue 2 a little extra long, unfortunately. But I swear to God, that one wasn't on purpose. But anyways, the other title that you wanted to discuss, if I'm not mistaken, was Kill Your Darlings, issue 6.
So All right. Well, we had the guys on, the Kill Your Darling guys on. I begged and pleaded for a particular character not to die, and I was afraid that was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I was afraid that was going to happen, this issue, and I was about to come on here raving like a lunatic, maybe crying perhaps. But this issue was like last issue was dark, you know, for you know, what you had happened at the start of it, and the guys were fairly emotional about it, and you can tell that the elements of it came from a very personal place. This issue was very dark, but for completely different reasons. Mm-hmm. This was like this was a catastrophic issue for the characters in this story, and again, you know, everything about it is just, this is such a fun book to read, and like, it's not like, you know, fun like happy-go-lucky, but it's fun because you hang on every word and every panel, and every image that you see, because the guys are writing and drawing it just so well. This is I talk about this. This is the type of book you buy the floppies, and then when the trade comes out, you have that trade and you put it right in that collection, you know, in there with the rest of them. This is just it's fantasy, it's horror. It is this is one of my favorite books.
Yeah, I mean, it has taken a hard left turn.
Hard
in since the little pause or the midway point. However, yeah, the midway point, because I don't think they paused at all. But yeah, like we talked about, you know, in Wolverine, how there's this crazy image that you see that like people are just. There's another one in this one. There's a few like there's a, like, don't get me wrong, like there's a ton of awesome art from Rob Quinn in this one, but there's one thing in particular that's like, well, this might be even fucked up for this book. Like it's to that level. But they've really, like, this new player who's thrown in the mix, who we've learned through the previous issues, is like not really a new player. She's kind of been there the whole time in a very different capacity. Everything with her is kind of starting to, has gotten fleshed out. I would say to like in totality to this point now, where we're going into the last two issues, and it's like, now we should, like, now it's time for everything to come together, or I guess crumble. I don't know exactly what's going to happen, because the brilliance of what Ethan and Griffin have done, and Rob too, is just like, I don't, like, there's no way a happy ending is guaranteed here. And if they do, it would be nice. Like, it could also work. I honestly, at this point, I kind of want a happy ending, but if they did a miserable one, that would also make sense. So they're in the driver's seat right now, whatever direction they go in. But
yeah,
I'm excited for these next two issues to see everything come together.
I mean, the feeling I got from our talk with them is that it wasn't going to be a happy ending.
Mm-hmm. Which makes sense.
Right? But, I mean, the name of the book is Kill Your Darlings.
I think we might have, without spoiling things, you may learn a little more into the definition of the title.
Yes, that is...
Without going any further into that,
right?
You guys know what I mean.
I don't want it to end, but like, I can't wait to see how it ends at the same time.
Yeah, this is, and then like we just keep seeing more and more animated stuff kind of entering the space with comics and everything, because it makes so much sense. And we know Scott Snyder's Witches show that's coming, that's animated, and I believe he's got more coming too. Like I would love to see Kill Your Darlings get turned into like an animated movie in some capacity, straight for streaming. I think it would be brilliant for them. But yeah, so some awesome stuff, of course, coming out of Image this week. Also from Skybound, who prints that Image. We got Transformers issue 4. We don't get the review copies for that, unfortunately. I think, you know, everybody's all in on Transformers at this point. Everybody's raving about it. But what about Boom, Joe? What do we got from them?
So from Boom, we have Zawa and the Bell of the Beast. I think it's Belly of the Beast, issue 4. Firefly, Fall Guys, issue 5, Abbott, 1979, issue 4. And then we have a number one from Boom. So, you know, the rule, Boom, number one, you read it. this is one I went to call dibs on. You said you had read it. And then I said, you know what, Nicholas, we have a lot of books that we each have dibs on. Let's dibs it. And let's, mm-hmm. so we can both read it and enjoy it. And that is The Displaced, issue 1. I don't have the creators potted up here. If you could,
I got you. So yeah, Ed Brisson, Luca.
Yes, Ed Brisson. Yes.
Casa Languida, D. Cuniff. And then, of course, Hassan Osman Alau. But yeah, you called dibs on it, and I was like, I looked it up before I read it. I was like, did somebody call dibs on this?
Because you know what it was? I think we saw that because we always make note when Ed Brisson writes a book.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, because we didn't do a solicit for this month. So I don't know if it was supposed to come out last month, because I remember very specifically talking to you about, like, I feel like on a solicit about an Ed Brisson book coming out. And go, oh, we're both sort of in on that kind of thing. Maybe it was on Twitter. I can't remember, but I couldn't find any documentation, which is why I called dibs. But
yeah,
so we're not going to discuss this book on the show, but we won't love it. We might do a one shot.
Yes, right? we're mixing those in this year. It's going to happen at some point. We need to get to, you know what? That can be something after we get 100 mainline episodes in. That's when we can start mixing it. Yeah, because like we talked about doing it for a while, and we have the one shot name, but we got to get to 100 before we do that, and we're making our way there. But the Displaced issue one by Brisson and Casalaguida, I believe I'm saying that correctly. Yeah, this was awesome, man. I knew you were gonna love it too. Like as soon as I was reading this thing, I'm like, this. You get introduced to this bizarre character off the rip, then you meet two very relatable characters, and then you're sucked right in, like right away. Like whatever the development is, I'm like, okay, I have three characters that I'm interested in. And then as if this major development that happens in the story after you get to know these three characters wasn't enough, you get like two other twists in this issue. And then on top of that, like this odd character who you meet right off the rip, there is a lot more to this guy. And I mean, as much as he's like seems to kind of try and be helping everybody in like a manic way, I also don't trust him either, because he's knowledgeable about things that I don't. It just makes me concerned a little bit.
Yeah, that's what I loved about it, right? It was that right off the rip, you get introduced to, it's a little frenetic, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, you see this character doing some wild, crazy shit. You see this other character and his buddy there, and then you see like this family, and you're like, what the hell's kind of going on here? And then the way they sort of all like came together, it's like in Pulp Fiction, right? Where you're getting all these different stories told at mm-hmm. the same time, and then they eventually all sort of come together. So this was like a mini version of that, revolving around the three characters, and then bang, something cataclysmic happens, and no one knows what's going on except for this one old guy. He's trying to tell him, he's trying to warn him, and at the end he's like, I fucking told you guys, why didn't you listen to me? But I get why I didn't listen to him, because he's a crazy old bastard, right? And that's what I loved about it, like Brisson's character development, because he gave all these characters like, they're all so different from each other, but they're now so interconnected. And the premise of, you know, the story of what happens to like this small Canadian town, and the fact that it's actually happened other places in, you know, in the North America, at least, you know, in Massachusetts is one of the, so it's like, I've never heard of those towns before. And you find out why it was just so well executed.
Yes.
This was a great first issue.
So I'm looking at the synopsis and I was going to read it off, but then it's like, and I know this is a thing that's happening in comics now where the synopsis of the first issue, like kind of tells you everything that happens in the first issue, but at the same time, it also doesn't tell you everything. But I will say the first sentence, the city of Oshawa, Ontario has vanished without a trace. Now that like, and there's more like, and again, they say more in the synopsis, probably in my opinion, given away a little bit too much, but it's just like, even still, like it's very interesting. Awesome first issue. Definitely off to like a TLDR worthy start for, I guess it would be, you know, one of our first one shots possibly, but we'll cross that bridge when we get there. But definitely go check that one out. I'll take us through these next few, Joe. So we got TMNT 148 from IDW, along with Hunger in the Dusk issue 6, which you are reading, Earth Divers issue 15, the Ministry of Compliance issue 3, which you are reading, Dark Spaces, the Hollywood Special issue 6, from Titan we got Blade Runner 2039 issue 10, Rebel Moon House of the Blood Axe issue 2, Bloodborne the Bleak Dominion issue 4, from Dynamite we got Vampirella issue 666, Savage Red Sonja issue 4, from a friend of the show, Dan Panosian, that the cover that I saw, I don't know if it was the issue 4 cover that he posted on Twitter,
it
looks awesome. Alice Cooper issue 5, Jennifer Blood, Battle Diary, issue 3. Sweetie Candy, Vigilante. Can I not read? Vigilante, yeah. Issue 1. And then from Mad Cave, we got Dear Editor, Issue 2. I have not checked this out yet, but I did like the first issue. And then A Legacy of Violence, Issue 10, Joe. And that brings us to Dark Horse.
Dark Horse. If you know, if we're ending with that studio, that is a sign of things to come. We have The Oddly Pedestrian Life of Christopher Chaos, Issue 7. Star Wars, The High Republic Adventures, Issue 3. Blue Book, 1947, Issue 1. This is written by James Tynan. Of course, I talked about... did I talk about Blue Book? I know I read Blue Book. I might have talked about just on our sort of monthly issues. But anyways... I haven't mainlined Blue Book yet. But
I think you pulled your dibs on Blue Book, like to talk about it.
On the show. Yeah, I think I did. Yeah. But anyways, Alien Encounters is sort of taking real life things and putting a comic book spin on it. Mm-hmm. Great first issue there. Usagi Yojimbo, Ice and Snow, Issue 5. That is the end of that particular story arc. We have Masterpiece, Issue 3, which you are reading. I highlighted it purple, but it should have been red. The Assassin's Apprentice.
Is there something you want to tell me?
I didn't read shit. The Assassin's Apprentice 2, Issue 3. And then we have two books we want to discuss here real quickly. Nicholas, you kick us off.
Yeah, so this is a book that I called dibs on a little while back, and I appreciate you remembered that. I'm assuming you remember that. Otherwise, you would have definitely read it. If you find this, I'm Already Dead, Issue 1, written by Matt Kitt, art by Dan McDade, colors by Bill Crabtree, and then letters by Jim Campbell. And of course, the editor on this is friend of the show, Daniel Chabon. The first few pages sets the stage for what's to come, certain players in the mix, and then shit just goes fucking haywire. Everything goes all over the fucking place, literally and figuratively. The story follows Robin Reed, who is the first civilian and also the first journalist to visit Terminus, which is this newly habitable planet that's been discovered by Earth via this quantum gate-like anomaly that was basically like right near our moon. And then after the first few pages where shit kind of goes like bananas, everything's tense. And like the title on its own, I mean, like once I saw it, Kint was on it, that made me feel even better. But I saw the title and I was like, this sounds amazing. And then it's Kint's writing. I got to check it out. So you have that on top of things kind of going that shit right away. Like nobody feels safe in this story whatsoever, including our main character. Because I mean, the title just implies like, hey man, I'm picking this up right now and I'm reading it, then this person must have bit the dust. So I really enjoyed this first issue. I don't know how long the run is, but definitely something worth checking out, especially if you are a Matt Kitt fan.
Nice. Yeah, this the title alone pulled me in. Mm-hmm. Matt Kitt writing it definitely pulled me in. So I can't wait to hear you talk about this one later on. And then lastly, what we have from this week is from Dark Horse, The Witcher Wild Animals, Issue 4. It's the end of this particular arc from a friend of the show, Bartosz Stibar. And I think he recently announced the next Witcher project.
Yes,
right?
He did. Yep.
Yeah.
Not slowing down anytime soon. He is kicking ass. And the artist on this one with him was Natalia Varenkina. Yes. Colors, Patricio Delpeci. And then letterer is, take a wild guess, Hassan Osman Elau, because the man's doing it all. But yeah, what'd you think of the finale?
I loved it. I've loved every arc that he has done with The Witcher, and I'm glad that he's got more in the pipeline. Because I think, again, we talk about writers understanding the characters. He gets it, right? It's a fellow countryman for him. Mm-hmm. And he always picks great artists to tackle these particular stories, right? So I thought this was a very satisfying ending to this particular arc. I enjoyed it right from the first. This was some good stuff. We really saw The Witcher in peril, in this arc, and I love that.
The previous story that Bartosz wrote for Witcher, I can't remember which title that was, but that was like right around when we had him on. That was my favorite art, I think, on the series until we saw Natalia's work. Her art might be my favorite. It's between those two. Either way, like you said, they've been picking outstanding artists. And God, this ending too. This has been this particular story has been a very interesting experience, because it's like it just leads to so many questions with Geralt as a character, and how he views things, how he handles things, and just the like living the life that he wants to live. Like, is it right? Is it wrong? Like, is there any other way to go about it if you're trying to do quote unquote the right thing? But yeah, like this is dark in a different way, the story, but the ending is like specifically like dark. So yeah. I really enjoyed it. Again, all these Witcher stories that are coming out from Bartosz, like, you don't have to have read the other ones to pick them up, but at the same time, Joe and I have been loving these. So if you're a Witcher fan, you're going to want to check them out. He really does know how to write this character well.
Yeah, he sure does. And just grab them, read them. You're going to love them.
Yep.
So absolutely. That Nicholas takes us to 45 minutes in. The first man. Well, we got sidetracked with movie talk at the beginning.
This is true. It always derails us. Once I heard MCU, I'm like, oh no.
Yeah. We'd be at a solid 35 minute mark right now, which is where we want to be. But anyways, that's neither here nor there. So what was the book that you discussed last week, Nicholas? It was
Dark X-Men,
written by Steve Fox.
Yes, sir.
So I said, yes, because you raved about his writing. I said, that name sounds familiar. Oh, that's right. I've got a book I've been sitting on dibs for a very long time, written by the same writer that Nicholas might like to read, and that is All Eight Eyes from Dark Horse Comics, written by Steve Fox, with art by Peter Kowalski, with colors by Brad Simpson, and letters by Hassan Osman Alau.
Oh, what? Who is right? that?
I don't know. Some up-and-comer. Pay attention to him. You might hear his name a lot.
Killing it. Right, seriously, the first time I saw I remember seeing his stuff, though, and he may have been around before, but it was with Above Snakes by friend of the show, Sean Lewis. I mean,
you know what it is too? It's like one of those things, like, because admittedly, and we're getting better at this, we, you know, as a comic book, you know, consumer, you're not always paying attention to the letter. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things, like he's got a very unique name, and it's like once you see it, you can't stop seeing it anywhere.
Yes, 100%. Right. His style really like enhances everything too.
And especially in this book, and I'll get to that in a bit. So synopsis: in the forgotten corners of post 9/11 New York City, skittering shapes in the darkness prey on the people society leaves behind. College dropout Vince Spencer flows through life in a drug and party fueled haze until one terrible night sweeps him into a drifter's reckless war against giant eight-legged horrors stalking the city. So this was four issues, and it was perfectly paced. Like, sometimes you're like, to me, the sweet spot is 5 to 6, but AWA does a lot of four issue arcs, and they do them well. But there's a lot of times where it's like, oh, it's four issues. Are they going to be able to tell the story, you know, and have it all kind of come together that quickly? This does it perfectly, right? Really, like, four issues, nice and tight. Boom, tells a great story, doesn't leave you wanting, like going, oh shit, like I'm missing something. I needed more to really kind of finish, you know what I mean? Like, no, it was great. And awesome. There was never a point where I was thinking either to myself, how are they going to wrap this up with only like one or two issues left? Right. So, like, I didn't have any of those questions. I just read it, I enjoyed it, and it felt the right amount, if that makes sense.
That's awesome.
So it starts off as what appears to be sort of a basic horror story involving spiders and a man who is as obsessed with hunting them. You don't necessarily know why. You get introduced to these two characters sort of off, and that's really where the first issue just sort of revolves around. So the issues one and issues two really suck you in. They do its job of just making you want more. And the story in and of itself right then and there is very intriguing. But it's the third issue that gives you the backstory of one of the characters that I'll discuss in a moment that gives the story really its purpose. Like, it's emotional center. Like, okay, this is where we're coming from. You know, you maybe kind of had a feeling, but until you see exactly how it unfolds, for this particular character, you're like, oh, God damn. So like I said, it was just paced so well, because then you get that fourth issue where it all you know, comes together and gives you that nice, tight, satisfying conclusion. And, you know, aside from, you know, the great character development that we get here from Steve Fox and the horror element, there's a nice little political subplot to it that I didn't see coming that you didn't necessarily need, but it just like gave the story that little extra oomph. Because it allowed for another character to kind of play a role that you're introduced to earlier. Like this could have just like revolved around Vin and Reynolds, those two characters hunting spiders. And you could have given me a 4-issue story on just that with, you know, Reynolds' background, which I'll get to in a second. And I would have been very satisfied. I would have enjoyed that very much, but having this little extra subplot to it just really gave it a little extra oomph. Which I enjoyed very much because it made another character, a minor character that you're sort of introduced to, like when he gets his, you're like, yes, oh, so good, oh, chef's kiss. So, you know, it's a great little quick horror story, and you know, Peter Kowalski's art is fantastic. Well, I'll dive into that a little bit more, but like we talk about this all the time, especially. I find more so with horror than any other genre, like the writer and the artist, when you have just like that right connection, it elevates a horror book that much more, because to me, horror needs a certain aesthetic to it. We talk about this like with Alex Cormack's art, Delabar Talaich, right? Some of those guys, they have a very specific aesthetic that just fits the horror genre so well. And Peter Kowalski's work here, is top notch, is excellent. So some of the characters that were introduced as the two real main characters, as the synopsis sort of stated, is Vin. And when you first meet him, he's a lost cause, right? He's got no money, appears to be a junkie, you know, or at least, you know, you could tell, you know, he's into partying kind of thing. But he's getting kicked out of his apartment. And this was sort of a great bit of a storytelling device, because it gets him wandering sort of like this sort of Central Park kind of type area around midnight, where he stumbles upon what appears to be a homeless guy killing someone.
Oh,
right. So what does he do? Like what any other cold, you know, a red blooded American would do, whips out our cell phone to record it so we can throw it on Tic Tac, you know? So as he's doing that, right, this homeless guy just takes the phone from him and just knocks him the fuck out, right? And then he wakes up and he's, you know, could be in the sewers or someplace, and he's got this, you know, he's got this sort of homeless man sort of standing over him, and he's got a bag, and he's like, "What's that?" He goes, "Get me out of here, man! I don't need. I saw what I saw." And he's trying to tell him, "You know, you didn't see what you saw. Take a look." And he empties the bag, and it's this giant ass dead spider. Right. So what he saw was this guy, like, yeah, there was a dead man. He was standing over a dead human, but you know, he was killing the spider that had killed him. So right then and there, you know, okay, we got a horror story. It's involving spiders. And it's just like, it's terrifying, you know, right from the rip. And what I love about Vin's character is that he really does in these four issues, he does go through a really good sort of growth. Right, from being sort of a deadbeat, you know, loser to, okay, now he's got a purpose, right? Now he's discovered a little bit about himself. And you've got this whole sort of monster hunter, you know, bug hunter element to it now as well. So, you know, that's Vin. And then Reynolds is the homeless guy. He's the other real main character. But there's a lot more to him, which you get in issue three. This is what I was sort of talking about. You get his backstory and why he... you know, is out there, you know, just he's been spending a decade just sort of, you know, hunting these spiders and tracking them down. And it's become his life's purpose. And when you get that, the
hey, kiddo. Oh, I hear the wee one.
Yeah. She's on the ground doing a Marine call, trying not to be seen.
Oh, wow.
There you go.
He gets it,
but his life's purpose and why that is, and it is gut-wrenching, right? And you want to talk about some character growth there. This is a character that really kind of goes up and down as well. But telling Vin the truth, and he says, listen, kid, you can do one of two things. You can join me because you apparently got nothing else going on with your life, or you can go back to your drug fueled ways. Forget this ever happened and I'll never see you again. Okay. But you know, if you want to, I'll be out in the park Friday night kind of thing. And what's great is that it actually a couple of days go by and you see this character, Vin, he's ruminating on like, what the hell did I just see? He can't shake it. He doesn't want to believe it, but he can't get it out of his head until he finally meets back up with Reynolds and says, all right, I'm in. And then the rest of the story is about them just sort of, you know, on this monster hunting crusade. And then, you know, with the purpose of like Reynolds is looking for his white whale, so to speak. And that's sort of how everything kind of comes together, you know, in the last issue. So like it's really, like I said, you could just have that aspect of the story and be completely sold. But then we get introduced to another character named Dominguez, this part was a little like, I couldn't quite, they don't seem like they're a police officer, more like sort of a security guard working for a city councilman. Or, you know, a city, you know, some sort of city, like some sort of politician, if you will. And during one of, you know, Reynolds and Vin's, you know, hunts, they leave a giant fire and a bunch of dead spiders around. They don't have enough time to clean up. They got to skedaddle. So this cop brings it in to, you know, to where they go, look what I found in the park. We can do something about this. And the councilman, Mr. Gordino. No. You burn that. It's probably just, you know, you're not seeing what you're seeing. He's just trying to sweep it under the rug kind of thing. But again, this character can't leave it alone. Like, that's fucked up. This is a giant ass spider. This thing's the size of a, you know, a middle school kid, for Pete's sake, right? And so she sort of gets roped into this as well. And then we find out that Mr. Gordillo, this you know, Dominguez's boss, this is the city planner's politician. He's not a good guy. Slick back hair, sloppy steaks, you know, lives for New Year's.
Oh no.
And so he's cutting sort of these, he's trying to like cut this sort of back alley deal with a plot of land away from like the mayor. So like he's trying to like, you know, pocket all the money and all that shit. And like, again, we talked about like this with the Displaced, how you get a couple of these different stories and how they sort of all come together. So you got the sort of like political asshole who gets inadvertently pulled into all of this. A subordinate of his, you know, works at either detail or security, whatever it might be for him, how she gets roped into it. And then everything, it's just like, it's a tight, awesome horror 4-issue story that I think, you know, was written really well. And Kowalski's art and Simpson's, Brad Simpson's coloring, it's dark, it's dank, like it's just perfect for arachnid type story because spiders are gross.
This sounds awesome. Like you, right? Just on the creators alone, I was in because Peter Kowalski from what is it, from Where Monsters Lie, and then obviously Steve Fox.
Like, yeah.
This my one question before you go any further is, so spiders you're okay with to some extent, but not birds.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
Okay. What if the spiders were this big, though?
Well, that would suck because these are, like, you know. And what's really cool too is that they're all different types of spiders. Like Kowalski draws like a daddy long legs, you know, like on the balconies of like a New York City's apartments, just kind of. And he's got big old tarantulas and shit like that. So like his art and Simpson's coloring is absolutely fantastic. But I wanted to mention real quick, Hassan. Atzmon allows lettering, right? Because his lettering in general is really cool. But what he does in this book is like, you know how like there's when there's like actions that happen, you know, an artist, you know, and
sound effects,
right? Yeah, that kind of stuff. Well, you know, allow just really like bends them around, does some really cool artistic, creative things with them, right? And so it really popped. His lettering really popped, and the sort of action. You know, sounds that, you know, are portrayed really pop as well. So again, this was just a really, like, this isn't like the type of horror book that you like, it's going to make you like, I have to read at daytime, but it's like that, just like that gritty, just sort of like, great sort of horror storytelling that just is like if you hate spiders, you might not like this book. It might make you feel like that. But it was just a really, really kick-ass story that I enjoyed very much.
I like the sound of this. And because it's a tight story, I'm assuming obviously it's best fit for a movie, but do you think there's, without spoiling the ending, of course, is there potential for like if they wanted to do more with this and then in turn, do you think it might be better suited for a show versus a movie?
Well, I mean, you could. It definitely sets up that way where you could continue it on. To me, it should make a great movie, but I could see it being a TV show. But like, again, like you'd have to maybe eventually move on to a different type of insect or something like that. And at what point are you jumping the shark, so to speak?
Sure, 100%. Okay, cool. Yeah, this sounds great. I'm not gonna waste time when it comes to reading this one because two creators that I really enjoy, and Hassan Utsman El, which by the way, a little peek behind the curtain, just to bring it back to the cloakroom conversation from earlier. Hassan actually is the one who connected me to the letterer of Widowmaker, Nathan Kempf, who you may have heard that name before, because he's the letterer also on Edenwood, which is a title we've talked about on here quite a bit. But that's a conversation again for, we already touched on a little bit. But I do want to get to my book that I have planned, and it's I Hate Fairyland from Image Comics, which Joe, you had called dibs on a while back, but then taking you a while to get to it. And then one day when I was in, you know, I was visiting my in-laws and then coming back, we stopped off in Mystic. They have this little bookstore that whenever Laura and I are in Mystic, we like to stop by. And they had a spinner rack there. They had a pretty good graphic novel section, especially for a regular bookstore, not a comic book store. They had a pretty good comic section. They had a healthy amount of manga too. And they also had this spinner rack. And on this spinner rack were like a lot of first volumes, like titles that, like, if you haven't checked these titles out before, like, you know, this is the spot where they're highlighting all of that. And one of them was I Hate Fairyland. I saw the first volume, like, Joe hasn't talked about it on the show, but I gotta get this. I gotta pick it up because I need this. And it did not disappoint whatsoever. You were so kind to undibs it, give it to me. I greatly appreciate that. Now you can go nuts with it. It is available on Hoopla. And there is a second volume to this title that began running. I think it's on its 11th issue that's out this week. We mentioned it earlier. So I'm not touching on those 11 issues. I'm touching on the initial 20. Either way, Scotty Young is the writer on both. In this instance, though, the one I'm talking about, Scotty Young is the artist. I do not believe he is the artist on his second run, and I Hate Fairyland. I don't know who the artist is, but I'm sure that Scotty picked somebody perfect, but there's nobody better than Scotty Young for this story. I mean, it's fucking outstanding. I love his art style. We both enjoy his art style a ton, but I'll get into that a little bit more later. I do want to mention colors by Jean-Francois Bellou, and then letters are by Nathan Picos. This is a 20-issue story. Again, not talking about the current one, which, again, is we're on 11 over there. There are four volumes for trades of this. If you read on Hoopla, I think there are actually also two. It's broken up into like 10. There's like two, like a book one and a book two. It's like 10 issues in those. So, you know, for ease, if you want to read it on Hoopla there. But I definitely recommend I read a lot of stuff digitally now just because you and I have review copies, as much as we still pick up a lot of physical copies as well, whether it be in trade form or single issue form. But I really enjoyed being able to read this in the physical form, just because there's so much like mayhem that's going on here. And for some reason, like this, I felt like if I was doing this digitally primarily, it wouldn't have like hit me in the way that I wanted it to at first. So just a small note on that front. But when it comes to the synopsis, an Adventure Time / Alice in Wonderland style epic that smashes its cute little face against grown-up Tank Girl / Deadpool-esque violent madness. I mean, if that all sounds interesting to you, you don't need to listen to another fucking word that I have to say, because that is an outstanding representation of this. But a little more. Following Gert, a 40-year-old woman in a 6-year-old's body who has been stuck in the magical world of Fairyland for nearly 30 years, join her and her giant battle axe on a delightfully blood-soaked journey to see who will survive the girl who hates Fairyland. And also, just on this, the first issue, too, the first volume, I should say, there's a quote from Neil Gaiman on it. a candy colored and vicious delight and always dangerously funny. So, I mean, Neil Gaiman's approving of this and you know it's that fucking good. So a couple of the characters that we have here in this, I'm just going to stick to the first volume. We have Gert, who's also full name is Gertrude, main character who we heard about a little bit already, a child who's been sucked into fairyland somehow. It happens like right off the rip, but she did not want to be. Like, this kid is like legitimately terrified as she's like, because the way she enters fairyland is just like, that's like, why is this happening to her? We get no explanation. Like, if she triggered something or whatever, she seems like she got sucked in for some reason. She was like chosen. And, it was like sad at first. Like, I felt bad for the kid, and the way she enters too is like violent as well. It's like, not only does this kid not want to be here, but she's getting like beaten up and bruised along the way. So it's just like, how can you not feel for this kid? And then like, they tell her, okay, you have to find this key, and then that's how you're going to get home. And like, again, she's there for a long fucking time. Like, they do a time jump very early on in this, but she looks the same. But man, like, it's brutal experience for this kid. Like, it what's brilliant about it too is like, Scotty sets it up where, oh, okay, like, it's, this is like, we're hearing like, oh, this kid's like a real asshole and everything, but like, if you look at what happened to her right away, she's terrified. She doesn't want to be there. I don't blame her for losing her shit, because everybody's like, oh, it's fine, you're gonna make it out of here and you're gonna be back home in no time. And then it's fucking 3 decades later, and I didn't want to be here in the first place. So she's awesome. Love that character. Then we get Laringen Wensworth III, also known as Larry. He is Gert's guide, and he is a fly, I believe is what he is. He's like this little guy. Unless he's like a flea, maybe. But either way, he looks a fly-looking dude. And then the last main player that's not spoiling things is Queen Claudia. Or Claudia, excuse me, I should say. She's
having a hard time reading tonight.
I am getting it all on my system now before that other stuff later.
Yeah, yeah.
The ruler of, I also have a hard time writing some of this stuff down, apparently. Looking at my notes, it's like, what the fuck happened there? Anyways, the ruler of Fairyland is Queen Claudia, beloved by all. And like I mentioned, there are other key players that come into the mix, but I feel like I'd be spoiling some plot points there. Again, art style, like, can't get enough of Scotty Young, cartoony and also violent. Anytime that, and I think I don't know if I can speak for you on this. I'm actually curious how you feel about this comment. Anytime I'm reading anything Scotty Young is writing, and then I see he's not the artist, I instantly feel like a little bit of like, like, not maybe disappointment's too strong, but it's just like, I wish it was him doing the artwork on this.
Yeah, his artwork is very distinct, right? And it is very cartoony. And I love it. And anytime I see a Scotty Young cover, I grab it, right? Mm-hmm. And I got a ton of those. Now, Middle West, he was the writer, but not the artist.
Right.
The artist was Jorge Corona, I believe, unless I'm screwing that up. But anyways, so like, I love his writing because he's a fantastic writer, but his art style is very distinct. And so I get how it might not be for every title that he might be writing on. But at the same time, like, it is fun because he's got a very distinct way about it. Like, it's like one of those things, like, you see Scotty Young, you know it's Scotty Young.
100%. And you were right. It is Jorge Corona, which they have a new title that they are going to be working on together that I have called dibs on. Not sorry about it. But then on the note of the coloring too, of course, we're talking about all of Scotty. Again, Scotty's, you know, art style is very distinct. Jean-Francois Belleau's colors are perfect for the story, perfectly complement Scotty's art. It feels like, honestly, from the other stuff I've seen from Scotty before, it feels like this is just the guy who's done his stuff previously. Just, I don't know that to be the case or not, but it just fits perfectly. And just for the art alone, like, to me, this is an all-time Image comic series. You don't see art like Scotty's every day. If you enjoyed like the Cartoon Network of old, like, I'm talking like in the aughts, like, you know, when I was watching it and everything, maybe a little before that, I forget when Cartoon Network started, but either way, if you like those shows, like, back in the day, you like this alone, like, you should be picking this up. And that's for people too, who, like, I know all our listener base are comic book readers, but if you know somebody who doesn't read comics, but you know, they like that shit from back in the day, I would tell them, like, hey, maybe you want to check out I Hate Fairyland, or maybe just gift them I Hate Fairyland, because, you know, it's always important to keep expanding the medium. That's why we do what we do here. And then when it comes to the writing too, like your other podcasting partner reminded me of this recently when we were doing some work. Repetition is the key to comedy, and the key to comedy is repetition. And there are quite a few funny moments that are like standalone in this, but there's like this running gag that Scotty has going on in the first few pages of at least each of the first three issues, something to that effect. And it's just like, it's a great tone setter, I absolutely like, it's just, you know what you're getting into, you know, it helps you get to know Gert a little bit more and the place that she's in and just like the state of Fairyland, because she's been there as long as she has. So you have that, then you have the miserable pairing of Gert and Larry, and they just riff off of each other perfectly. And like, I could see, like, I know how many issues we have of I Hate Fairyland now, like obviously in this first run, and then it's come back. I just, you know, would hope that the second run, I don't know if Larry's in it or not, because I don't know, like, just without getting into anything too far, I would love to see just those two working together more and more, because they're such a miserable pair in the absolute best way. And then when it comes to the plot, again, just talking about the first arc, it's simple in a lot of ways, but at the same time, that allows the dialogue and the art and the absurd character that is Gert, like, allows all of that to shine. So great series, and you guys will absolutely binge the fuck out of this first volume if you pick it up. So you might want to pick up two right away. You're on mute, brother. We are there tonight. We are the Gert and Larry of podcasting.
Dibs on Larry. So the reason why I called dibs on this was when I started getting back into comics, and when I was still working in Somerville and I was going to Hub Comics, my guy there who would recommend books to me all the time, he had recommended Middle West. And he said, well, if you like that, you should really check out I Hate Fairyland. And I said, oh, it sounds fantastic. And then, you know, when we started doing the show, I was like, oh, this will be a book that I just like, oh yeah, I called dibs on. And then we've called dibs on 1,000 other books, and I just never got to it. So when you asked, I said, yeah, you know what, go for it. I haven't, you know, it hasn't been on my radar, and I kind of you forgot about it a little bit. So I'm glad that you read it, and I'm glad that you loved it, because I can't wait to read it now more so than ever. And yeah, like you said, like, Scotty Young's art is just, it's fun, but man, when he wants to get violent, he really can.
Yeah, I mean, just look at the if you guys look over on our Instagram, Joe shared it there. Did you use this picture, or did you use the other one that you made?
On Instagram, I used that one.
Yeah,
on Twitter, I used the one with the double Freedom Rockets.
Yeah, I mean, this is, if you just look, so the one over on Instagram, or if you're watching our stream, I mean, this character is a friggin' monster, and that axe too, it's insane. So yeah. I love it. And I didn't talk about the pacing at all, but it's just like, this reads so damn fast. It's so good, dude. It's so good.
Yeah, look at Larry. He looks like a badass. a true degenerate. Love
it. You know what? Larry may end up being your favorite character when you read this. Quite honestly, the more I think about it. But yeah, so a lot of fun there. So we got
this, and this should be an animated show, to be honest with you.
Oh yeah, dude. Anything Scotty Young's doing should be animated, because you're just going to lose so much of like the character, like of the story. It's just so I would love to see some of that for him. Yeah. That would be. This would be fucking great, man. You put Amazon Prime, like you guys are doing a lot with like adult cartoons and everything. Like, that's where I believe Witches is going to be. So, and obviously we have Invincible. So give I Hate Fairyland a look. You won't be, I don't think you'll be upset about it. But that is going to do it for us this week. Again, a reminder, make sure you go check out our audio channels and subscribe to one of them. Please leave a 5-star rating and review wherever you listen, or at least the highest rating and review that you possibly can. Helps the show out a ton. That's the only place where you can get our Fireside Chats. And you never know when the next one is going to drop, because you know why? We never fucking know when the next one is going to drop. And also, last reminder too, the Cloakroom. Scott Snyder Presents the Cloakroom. The Kickstarter for that is going to be dropping again. For those who are just catching the end of this show, I have the first story actually in that, Widowmaker. That is my first published comic. My artist on that is Nayara Rodriguez, and I mentioned Nathan Kempf is the letterer on that. So you guys will be able to hear more about that that tonight, if you're listening to our stream right now, that is going to be broadcast, that conversation with Ming Chen from Comic Book Man. That's what it was. Jeez. We're going to be sharing that over on our YouTube and on our Twitter page. You guys can go watch that elsewhere if you want to. We won't be posting the audio for that or anything like that. But yeah, that is going to do it for us this week. Until next week, Joe, stay sexy.
You know what, baby?
I like Nick's just like, I'm out. All right, we're done.